You are listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for downloading and subscribing. Coming to you virtually live from high atop the historic Raleigh building in beautiful downtown Raleigh. The NCF&B takes the listener behind the scenes to tell the stories of the people that contribute to the creation of the food and beverage community of North Carolina. And now, the misfits in the dish pit, the faces of the front. They are Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today we go out, back out to the Queen City, and we have a very exciting happening, and momentarily it might be opening, well, in reality next month, but we are talking about the Vintage Cigar Bar and Cocktail Lounge, and with us is the general manager and soon to be the NCF&B's own personal catador, Mr. Ben Torres. Welcome.
Thank you, guys. Glad to be here.
I had to roll my R's for that. I don't know if you prefer that pronunciation or just a straight Torres, but there, nonetheless.
You're good. I appreciate it either way.
Yeah, it's like you were a like a news reporter talking about the welcome to El Segundo, California. Yeah, you're like, you know, California, you could have said that in the same speech. You didn't have to say
California.
Yeah. Speaking of which, when I knew that Ben Torres was coming on, I'm like, wait, Ben Fong Torres, the editor for Rolling Stone that was also the real life character on Almost Famous? You don't work for the Rolling Stone, correct?
I am musically inclined, but no, I do not work for the Rolling Stone.
But you are, as Matt mentioned, going to be opening up the Vintage. You got a lot of beverage in your backstory. You're going to be the general manager of the Vintage. So before we get into like what the Vintage is, tell us a little bit about yourself, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. For the Charlotte market, I actually got involved after coming to the area to Belmont Abbey for undergrad about 15 years ago. And ironically, after that, you know, I love how you guys tap into the coaching trees and hierarchy for everyone.
Yeah.
From a tutelage standpoint, I actually started working for Patrick Whalen even before Five Church had become a concept.
Oh, wow.
And so from an operational development standpoint, really learned a lot from those guys over the years, and as well as Clint Medlock over at Crave, really focusing on finding the smaller names in the Charlotte market that were able to get established. As all the corporate names and whatnot continue to come into town and swirl around you, trying to just keep the mom and pops prevalent.
That's super cool.
And so how'd you get attached to this project, and what's the like genesis of this? You know, I know we're talking about a cigar bar first and foremost, and then high-end cocktails. So how did that come to be?
So this was actually a dream of the proprietors, Dan Weiss, who is actually not a hospitality vet by any means. He just understands from a guest experience standpoint what he wants to see, and found partners on the industry side that really bought into the idea of, now wait a minute, typically cigars are just off by themselves. They have like the corner of this shopping plaza where they can go retail and kind of do their own thing. And we recognized an opportunity of, we can incorporate this not just with cocktails, but any sort of thing in the spirit world, as well as small plates. There can be pairings and flavors that blend in a variety of ways. And, you know, as long as you pay attention to the way North Carolina wants you to structure it from a licensing standpoint and make sure everybody's kosher with smoking inside and everything, it's a really cool opportunity. So they saw the South End market as something that was worthwhile. There really wasn't a strong retail presence or lounge comfortable areas. And of course, they start working on this right before COVID hit.
Yeah.
And so they realize this is actually a gold mine, because you're talking about opening up something that by design is socially distanced, spread out, making everybody feel a little more comfortable. And so that's sort of helped evolve the concept as it's been built out.
Yeah, and a lot of the materials that's been written about you guys and what you're doing, there's a lot of talk about a sophisticated hyper HVAC system and you're within a humidor, because obviously that's the problem with cigars, right? Not only do they smell wonderful, but they stick to you and you smell like them. And then if other people who are not smoking cigars, it can be not the best, you know, smell for them. So can you talk to us? Like, I know you're not an HVAC guy by trade, but what do you know and what is the differentiating factor between this one?
Yeah, I actually learned about the importance of this when I was at Crave, because Crave is known in Charlotte as being an upscale hookah bar.
Okay.
And so same concept, you've got a good bit of smoke everywhere. It's so important from a ventilation factor to have everybody around you feel comfortable, because not everybody at your table every time is going to want to partake. Sometimes they're just there for a martini. And so you want to be able to adapt and accommodate the best you can. It's safe to say this HVAC system is the most expensive part of this build out.
Yeah.
Because the cigars are even more so. We want to be able to accommodate where this location is right there where Dilworth meets South End in terms of neighborhoods. And so you have a variety of demographics. None of them want to leave a place feeling like they have to go get dry cleaned immediately.
Nope.
So to put this in there, and whether they're in the main lounge by the bar or back in the locker area, you know, you want to be as comfortable as you can be. And thankfully, this thing is actually set to routinely suck up smoke and infuse fresh air. We have the ability to literally press a button on an app and refresh it whenever we want to. But thankfully, it's already set in place where you're hardly going to know it's there.
That's pretty cool. I like when technology can mix with, you know, kind of like a throwback type of vibe. I mean, it's definitely a throwback vibe. I mean, when I first moved to Raleigh, North Carolina, it was 2013. And I remember there being maybe three or four actual cigarette lounges or cigar lounges. And that seemed, coming from California, that seemed super alien. Like, wait, what? That's a thing? I don't know. I just didn't really see those in California in general. And many of them have kind of gone away. I think like out here, Havana's is still around, but they might be the last one in town. Forgive me if I can't think of anyone else that's doing it. So this is like a great revival that I could see. I mean, is there a culture of cigar smoking in Charlotte that you're igniting or that you're hopping onto, or is this something more independent?
This is going to be the next stage in terms of evolving that culture here in Charlotte. Because right now, all of the different suburbs, they have their retail atmosphere. They have the ability to go and purchase, and most places have a couple places to sit, but they don't have full bars. It's very rare to find. There's one or two in the outskirts that might actually have a full bar offering that they're able to accommodate all the challenges that come with that. And so, yeah, for us being positioned just south of that uptown area, this is going to appeal to corporate, date night, anybody finding a cool group idea to go do. This is going to really tap into a lot of those different markets to give them something unique to go check out.
Yeah. I want to get into cigars for a moment.
Yeah.
And so, Ben, I know that, you know, you are come from the cocktail side and cigars are a newfound level of expertise for you. And while you're not there yet, Max, I didn't know if you knew this, but there actually is a word that I used in the beginning for a cigar sommelier.
Yeah, what was that?
Catador.
Yeah. Catador.
Yeah, C-A-T-A-D-O-R. Anyway, Ben, I don't know if you're at that level yet, but nonetheless, tell us about the cigar program and what somebody who is knowledgeable about cigars or smokes cigars regularly can expect there.
Yeah. One thing that was really fascinating to me as we started to work with the vendors to try to curate this inventory is understanding that from a cigar culture, a lot of the distributors are actually very selective about the different businesses that they work with. So, you know, on the cocktail side, we're used to the reps coming in all day long saying, please carry this new age tequila. Yeah. Please carry this bottled and bond. Like, come get it. Like,
we
it's great.
Will pay you extra money if you carry this.
Yeah. And I guess that might be where, for some people, cigars seem a little intimidating or off-putting, because some of these guys have actually said, they're like, listen, I had one brand tell me, they're like, listen, we want to see what your sales are for the first 3 to 6 months of certain brands. And if it aligns with our profile, then we can chat. And I'm just sitting there like, buddy,
You want to sell me something?
Yeah.
You don't want me to move product. All right. That's fine. Well, as it also turns out, they are fans of collaborating with groups in the area so that in a different suburb of Charlotte, you might have some brands where they say, listen, within a certain set of zip codes or within that 277 loop, you know, we're the only store that can sell your brand. Mm. And so they set up those exclusive arrangements. And it's interesting, but I actually like the idea of being able to find something that's just as decent as those brands might be and offer a suggestion. Because at the end of the day, everybody's palate's different and we should be able to align to whatever you're looking for. And so, I mean, from a brand standpoint, you're definitely going to see a lot of Ashton, Alec Bradley, Davidoff. You're going to see these guys that have a great market presence nationally and even internationally. But in this market, there's just a wealth of opportunity. And the goal is to not just have the big, bold, scare everybody off type arrangements. Thankfully, the cigar world, especially in Charlotte, is actually very warm and inviting outside of these distributors. Those that smoke on a regular basis love sharing what they know. Mm-hmm. They love setting up, you know, these happy hour type arrangements where everybody's showing up after work and they just get to dive into this tobacco leaf that got sourced from Nicaragua, this one that came over from the Dominican Republic, and just being able to understand. I mean, we've even had reps say, you know what, once COVID and all this dies down, we're going to put you guys on a plane. We're going to take you down there. And another term for you would be a torcedor. They're like, we want to train you to be a torcedor, which is kind of your all-in hybrid individual who can go and roll anything in the factory to get it up for production.
Oh, wow.
And so we've enjoyed getting to understand that aspect of it, because then once I turned to the cocktail menu, I was like, you know what? I want to have fun with these names and pay tribute to the history of cigars and where it's come from up to this time. So I love the idea, you know, yeah, like I said, I'm not there yet. You know, there are some cigars where unless you have a steak dinner in you, it's going to be brutal to get through. And that's not my forte. I talk too much. I'm bouncing around the bar talking to everybody. So for me, it's usually something light to medium bodied, mm-hmm. which in that realm, you're going to tend to see more. You know, they use the term creamy, but it's just balanced. Something that's not really going to dry your mouth out too much. Something that can pair well, especially with your old fashions and Manhattans, a little bit of citrus. So something else to kind of just change it up a little bit. So I like the idea of being able to play a lot in that realm. So yeah, light to medium body, especially if someone is foreign to the concept and is very intimidated by it. The most important thing to do is just honestly ask the staff, where do I start?
Right.
They should be able to walk you down that path of, if you like vanilla, if you like bark, cedar, you know, any of those flavors that you stick out with your wine or whatever you might be drinking, they can find the one for you.
I do want to get into that pairing aspect because I think that's really just fascinating. But before we get into there, also, you were saying that, or I thought I read that you guys are also hand rolling cigars there. Is that a part of the? Is that a part of it, or no? Or is that maybe something that was a dream and now because of COVID and all things?
Well, yeah. So it'll be something that evolves over time. So mm-hmm. we actually do have a rolling table that, for now, is going to function as the host stand. And
perfect.
Our goal is,
let me roll you a cigar while you wait for your table.
Exactly. But the goal is, especially as things progress over the next few months, we want to especially reward those that sign up for membership and actually do some rolling on site with a couple different events. There aren't many people in Charlotte that are actually capable of rolling one decently, as we found out. But the goal is to tap into that market, utilize those guys for a couple of cool events as thank you to those that help us get off the ground. But yes, the table actually came from the factory where our house blend that we had rolled in the Dominican Republic. It actually was sourced from there directly after they rolled them. So it's tied in directly to us for sure.
Oh, so you have a house blend cigar that you will sell, like the vintage cigar. Nice.
Correct.
So yeah, Max, I don't know what you have, if you have a favorite, but I have indulged in many cigars in mm-hmm. my lifetime, and especially like living in New York, exactly like you said, Ben, you would go to all these steakhouses or these fancy steakhouses, and then after you could have cigars and brandy or whatever. And it's funny, I thought like, oh, I'm a I'm a big bold guy, you know, like give me the steak, give me the brandy or the cognac, and like give me the big robusto cigar, you know, and it's like, ugh, you get it's three puffs and you're like, that's just too much. And then you realize, okay, I'm more of a medium, easy, medium to light cigar smoker. What say you? What do you have a preference? Have you thought about that before?
Yeah, well, let it be known that I have smoked cigarettes on and off my life for a long time. I'll smoke for 2 years, and then I won't smoke for 7 years.
Yeah,
and then I'll smoke for a year, and then I won't smoke again for 5 years. So, like, I enjoy a cigarette, and I enjoy a cigar. I enjoy to smoke many things, and I like what the burn sensation of taking dry leaves and burning them and then inhaling them. I like that process.
Okay.
So I can enjoy the difference between them. When I first started smoking cigarettes, I was such a fancy person, as I like to be in everything. So I would look for like the best, I want only the best cigars or cigarettes. So I'd get like the Dunhills or like, you know, those like real fancy ones just to basically look like a baller.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say you had like one of those old school filters, like Humphrey Bogart style, and like you would put your cigar in the filter.
That'd be next level.
Yeah.
That'd be next level.
And wear your smoking jacket around.
Continued to smoke cigarettes or so. But no, I've smoked cigars a lot. And in fact, my infamous 4-day bachelor party went down in San Diego. And San Diego has a significant cigar culture. Many, many rollers on the streets in the Gas Lamp area. Many shops. So
on the streets,
like in the neighborhoods of like the downtown neighborhoods, like everywhere.
Oh, and like little tobacco shops.
Yeah, like whatever. And you can get so. So one of the days we went to some place and had them roll them for us, and then we went through the whole thing. And I probably smoked like 4 or 5 different cigars in one sitting. Like,
oh, wow.
We just, because we were like trying different things, but we were like sharing them. Is that overindulgent, Ben? Do you not recommend that?
In a COVID world?
Oh, yeah. COVID world is a whole nother ballgame. But yeah,
share the cigar with me.
Yeah.
I was shocked. Our cigar aficionado on site, Yanni, I was shocked to learn when he was trying to figure out the pairings for the menu of different whiskeys. At one point, I was trying to come over to his house, and I asked him what he was doing, and he sent me a picture, and he had 3 lit at the same time his patio with about 3 different espressos and 3 different whiskeys. And,
yes.
And he was like, yeah, I'm going to have to get back to you in an hour. I'm
He's
like,
doing
you're
research.
Not going to get back to me in an hour. Yeah, like you're going to be down for the count by then. Yeah, I wouldn't encourage it, per se, but... But yeah, I mean, you could certainly have a good 3 or 4 during the course of a real fun afternoon and evening and be able to explore a couple different flavors and enjoy yourself. Absolutely.
What, let's say there's a cigar aficionado that comes in and says, no, I want the biggest, boldest thing you got. Like, give me the, you know, like the Black Lung cigar. What do you have in those,
in
that category?
there's going to be at least half a dozen to a dozen for every profile under the sun. The humidor, the walk-in humidor that we have is going to be able to accommodate anything of those guys. Because whether it be Ashton or Avo or J.C. Newman, most of those guys will come in, especially with a brand in mind. And usually at that point, it comes down to, well, what size do you want?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want something that's going to be lasting an hour and a half? Or do you just want to give it a quick shot and it'll be a half an hour, and you can learn right off the bat if that's the one for you.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a variety of brands. And I'm very grateful to those partnerships with those distributors, because they're going to be doing training events, not just pairings, but being willing to come in and actually educate the greater audience that comes in day by day to just help them find their palate when it comes to the cigar world if they haven't.
But if I come into the vintage and I want a cigar, you have a menu, I'd assume, but I can also walk into the humidor and just look for myself.
And then yes, pick so out there's going to be an immediate retail atmosphere, so that even though from a Carolina standpoint, we will be a private membership lounge that allows us to structure that for the North Carolina purposes. But there will be a retail aspect where someone can just ask the host, I'm just here to grab a box of Avos. I'm just trying to figure out which one just got released. If you guys have it, they can quickly walk them through and make those selections and accommodate that easily.
I'm wondering, the name Vintage, could it be a double entendre of the vintage of like timeliness, it's old school, but then also, are cigars ever grown as vintage? Like, is there a vintage cigar, or could cigars work in a vintage sense?
They actually do. And this is something that a lot of them don't tend to spend a lot of time around, just because the results can be mixed. But there are those that say, like, hey, this has been aged 6 years, 8 years, where after production, they were able to actually set it off to the side to see what happens from that standpoint. The name, the vintage, particularly spoke to, as I built out the concept, when you walk in, the decor, the atmosphere is supposed to be reminiscent of if you were going to visit Havana in the 40s or 50s. What would that feel like? The furniture is definitely new, but everything around it,
just a bunch of commies driving around in some 56 Chevys.
There's going to be some classic cars that roll up. That I have no doubt.
Yeah.
But it really is to kind of play on that, where yes, it is considered a, you know, an old school staple, if you will. However, it's being infused into this format where, as someone's looking, you know, a lot of this crowd in that neighborhood of Dilworth, they have their date night. Even in a COVID world, they're like, we have to go out and do something. And this can appeal to them as well. You know, we could just do our regular dinner down the street, or we can pair that up with drinks and a smoke before and after and end up hanging out at the vintage.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I will pause to do a little commercial promo here, but I was thinking about this after I'm done with this little spot, Ben, you can inform me a little bit more. But I was thinking about the different places that you source your tobacco leaves. And obviously, I would assume that many of those sourcings are similar into where you would source coffee beans, like a Brazilian or an Ethiopian or Costa Rican bean. Maybe perhaps that's where your tobacco leaves were coming from. But to let it be known, I'm talking about sourcing of coffee because I'm talking about Boss Coffee, hot, brewed hot, chilled fast, flash brew, ice cold coffee company. But they do source Colombian and Brazilian beans. So that's kind of like where they're coming from. And then what's great is that it all kind of comes back to whiskey as well, because I don't think we've mentioned that Boss Coffee is run and owned by Suntory, as in Suntory whiskey. So there's a nice little connection between coffee, whiskey, cigars, all of that, you know. Get Boss Coffee on Amazon. It's brewed hot, chilled fast, and it's delicious. Comes in three different flavors. You have just the traditional black, vanilla, and cafe au lait. If you do search for it and you're purchasing it on Amazon.com, you can put in the promo code NCFBpodcast and receive 10% off your purchase. Go to Boss Coffee on Amazon.
After you've got your coffee, then you need the other stuff like wine, vermouth, beer. So for that, go to Triangle Wine Company, and they have four locations in the Triangle. They're at Waverly Place in Cary, they're in Holly Springs, they're in Morrisville, and they're also in Southern Pines and soon to be in North Raleigh. They are fantastic, the epitome of your local wine shop with great knowledgeable service. They'll do delivery, they'll do curbside takeout, and don't forget there also to use the NCFB promo code to receive a discount. And if you want to find out more, just go to trianglewineco.com, and they will take care of all your wine, beer, and specialty needs.
Yeah, so let's get back to that with some sourcing. I don't know how geeky we can get into this, but I do know, like, my way around a certain type of coffee roasting, and, you know, if I'm going to get, you know, I love a light roast with my coffee, because as opposed to like having that rich, bold flavor like you're talking about, Matt, I actually like a more light, fruit-forward, kind of almost like light, nuttier flavor in coffee. And usually you get that with like a lighter roast or a medium-bodied roast rather than just totally blasting it out. So I wonder, is that part of the process when you're doing this with tobacco leaves? And then is the sourcing like a Brazilian leaf versus a Cuban leaf versus a Dominican leaf specific in flavor profile?
They certainly can be. It was fascinating when I started to dive into it a little more a couple years ago. You know, I kept seeing the term Connecticut show up on cigars.
Really?
And it weirded me out, because I went to go up to work in New England for a couple years, and I was like, I don't remember seeing tobacco leaves anywhere. I don't understand. But, you know, it's one little facet of, as people were trying to find those different flavors to tap into, they ended up finding these broadleaf tobacco leaves in parts of Connecticut that were growing where there wasn't a lot of sunlight. and they were able to basically just like they did with old vines, old world vines, to bring them over to California and whatnot. These guys would grab those leaves and take them down south to Latin America to try to cultivate something utilizing these leaves. And it became very popular because the quality of those leaves were so well done. Instead of being filler for a lot of the cheaper ones overall, they started to wrap them into these guys that are now 8, 10, 12 bucks a pop because it actually upholds the flavor of those so well. But overall, yes, Latin America is certainly where you're going to find, I would say, 95% of your tobacco leaf growth of ones that are getting used in cigars. And a lot of that just comes from the overall climate. It suits itself well. Most go through the process of hanging and drying out the leaves to get rid of the chlorophyll. You'll find a couple oddballs in a cigar shop where they're actually green because they've maintained that in the leaf once they've taken that to production. But usually they want to be able to drain all of that, focus on getting the other flavors out by, there are some methods where they actually light small fires underneath in the barn, just so that it actually takes on a smoky aspect while the leaf is drying itself. And so you have a lot of cool ways that they can come about that. But it's, yeah, it's certainly coming from that area. And to your point, and even to the commercial spot, you we're planning on having coffee be a huge pairing aspect of our business here, because we're going to be using Enderly, a local crew that does a great job finding blends to ethically source from all over the place. But we want to be able to show that, I mean, a lot of times, especially in old school Havana, it was a double shot of espresso. It was a coffee Cubano where they would sit there during the day and get started. So for that reason, our goal is to actually open up early in the day. We're wanting to be 7 days a week, 11 to 11 outside of COVID restrictions, and just be able to kind of accommodate all those people that are, well, you know, I'm working from home, but I'm sick of staring at my dog. I'm going to go ahead and head down here for a little bit and get some work done, and then transition into those that are, you know, ready to turn it up a little bit.
Yeah, have a coffee Cubano and a Cuban cigar. You know, it was interesting. I think growing up, you had the embargo with Cuba, and so you couldn't get Cuban cigars, at least legally, and people would, like, smuggle them in or, you know, buy them when you went on your trip to Europe or something like that. But during that time, Nicaragua, Honduras, Dominican Republic were really honing their craft. And it seems to the point now where maybe it was just the like the magic or the feeling of something that was elusive because you couldn't get it. But now it seems like all of those are the same, are of equal quality of the Cubans, because they spent so long of, like, really honing their craft. Or, I mean, maybe that's BS because they've been honing their craft and it's just an illusion. But either or, yeah. I think all those places are great. But I still personally love a Punch cigar, or obviously the old standard bearer for me was Cohibas, and then Romeo and Julietas. Now, I know, like, those are, like, the big brands that are notable. So, but the next time you come on our show, or the next time you see us, I want you to come back. And if you like those brands, Matt, I want you to try these. So,
I'll bring six to Raleigh the next time, for sure.
Okay, yeah, you're coming to Raleigh soon, by the way, so I'll expect those. but beyond that, let's get into pairing cigars and, like, what drinks are best, because you were talking about coffee.
Yeah.
That seems like an obvious thing, but, you know, later in the night, I want to imbibe. I want to get a little, I want to feel a little alcohol, whiskey hug, or a cognac squeeze or something like that. So what are some of your, like, what have you discovered about what really works well with cigars?
Well, you know, our team has had a really difficult time putting together research and development when we realize we have to drink and smoke a good amount in order to properly pair these things and know where we stand with it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I was going to say, you must have done a lot of this. Ben's probably, like, in his, you know, late 20s, early 30s, but because of all the cigarettes, he looks like Kramer after that Seinfeld episode. He looks like he's about 76 years old. So, you know, maybe get... crack a window in there.
Every now and then.
I'm just kidding. He's as beautiful as the day he was born, everybody.
Aw,
just
thanks.
So you know.
Aw, thanks. Yeah. From a pairing standpoint, where we had fun was actually kind of taking what the cigar culture already gave us, where we would go and kind of do some research in other markets. And I noticed everybody would typically have a sparkling water or even like a glass bottle of soda. And they were focused on carbonation.
Mm.
Interesting.
And so for medium to heavy body, it was intriguing to me that they would often use that to kind of balance it out so their palate didn't dry out too quick. And so right off the bat from there, we ended up starting to utilize some bubbles. And so from the distributors, I started to ask for a couple. And sure enough, we settled on, we had a Blanc de Blanc that surprisingly was light enough where you still were, it didn't overtake the flavor from the cigar you were trying to go for. Mm. But the carbonation was perfect. Mm. And so all of a sudden we're like, wait a minute, especially bringing significant others or whatnot with you. It's like, okay, we can start deep diving into this because as we dove into more of the wine aspect, you know, I've always deferred to, like, I love a great Russian River Valley Pinot. You know, that's just like my go-to if I'm drinking it by myself. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden I realized, well, it's so light in comparison that, you know, that the balance for a pairing doesn't really work. That in reality, you have to find something that will have some more spice, some more pepper. So you find yourself going through either blends or just stronger varietals of Malbec, of these guys that, you know, at the end of the day are going to provide enough flavor and still tannin to help kind of coat the palate so that as you continue to smoke, it's still not going to be overbearing where halfway through the cigar you want to put it down. So from a wine standpoint, it was fascinating, but...
Well, that's, you know, what's crazy, too, is that Donald Champagne, the Blanc de Blanc you're referring to, makes its way back into just being so...
Did you say that Darnold, like Sam Darnold, or their darn old Champagne?
Definitely not Sam Darnold.
Okay.
His name should never be uttered again as a Jets fan. That darn old Blanc de Blanc Champagne, that dang old Champagne... Okay. Because it's so versatile. We always talk about, we're like, it, pretty much champagne goes with anything. Mm-hmm. And I never thought about it in a cigar sense, but damn, and that's kind of an enlightening thought. I've never thought about carbonation with cigarettes or cigars and how that would work, but sure, why not? That makes sense. Like, it just kind of like enlivens the palate. Like, all those bubbles just kind of make your taste buds kind of like rejuvenate every time. So you're like oxygenating your mouth, which probably makes a lot of sense as to why that would work. But all right, so that's wine. But I want to know, like, because you've got like scotch, super peaty scotches, and you've got like the kind of sweet, cedary, you know, oak boxed bourbons. And then you've just got like other things like Irish whiskeys over here, and even like the aforementioned Japanese whiskeys, very like probably leaning closer to scotch, I'd say, in that like angular feel and sharpness. But
brandies.
How does that, yeah, what does that translate in the scotch or in the whiskey category?
It really does seem like it's just another testament to going back to what you all were mentioning with Cuba, where for the longest time they actually make fun of the American market for whatever reason, saying that, you know, we just latched on to thinking, well, the Cubans are the best. That's the type of cigar that we have to get. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When in reality, those guys, yeah, everybody was perfecting their craft. They may have gotten to it first, you know, thanks to the Spaniards showing them how it's done. And so it was almost the same way from a whiskey standpoint, where a lot of people just kind of assumed, were like, well, big and bold, I should be pairing these together. That makes sense.
Right.
And in some cases, sure. If you are a peaty scotch individual, which I can say I am not. If I've had a big steak dinner and I'm feeling out there, sure, I'll go for it. And if that's the case, then yes, big and bold cigar just to help offset how peaty those Islay scotches could be. But yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, my go-to, especially from drinking lighter medium-bodied, would be the things like I think of like a Balvenie Double Wood, like something that has like a sherry cask finish, where you're just infusing that flavor on the end that you might not get out of the cigar, but they end up complementing each other very well. You know, even the local stuff that we have in Charlotte from a distillery standpoint that has finally started to really come up the way the breweries did a few years ago, your Ruas and Doc Porters, you know,
Defiant,
those are able to...
Also, is that the one that's the barley whiskey,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nashville, yeah.
That's good. You have those things that you can start utilizing from a local standpoint, which our goal is to actually have small flights to kind of compare the locals to what the industry standards have been for so long, to give everybody an idea of, listen, like, you know, at the end of the day, yes, is the ground different here than it is in Kentucky? Sure. However, that spice and that boldness of the rye that are coming out of this area, that's not necessarily a bad thing. They make for great Manhattans. And, you know, our bartenders have already had a field day with trying to create a couple of barrel-aged things for a program here that we can just go ahead and, you know, by using utilizing bitters that we'll make in-house, something that's going to be able to stand out and actually pair well with any type of bodied cigar.
I like that. So you're gonna carry a lot of local North Carolina distilleries in the bar? Is that what you're saying?
Our goal is to feature as much local product as possible. I mean, if there's anything that this pandemic has taught us, it's that, well, you know, industry will always look after industry, but there's a way that we can develop that even further. And so whether it's, you know, state-made tinctures, you know, craft sodas, you know, anything that we can find that's going to help stand out, that's, I mean, of course, we want the quality to be elevated. But if it's something local that we can feature and partner up with, we want to try to do that as much as possible.
You know, I was going to say, like, it made me, you inspired some thought in me just now when you're talking about pairing delicious whiskeys and not really like talking about local, but not putting an addendum as like, well, they're good for local, like they're just good in general. Matt and I have an episode that's going to come up soon with a guy from out there in Wilkes County who's doing a Stardust Cellars, and just a precursor, the guy is awesome and unique and different, oddly enough, and kind of makes sense. He works for RJ Reynolds, I believe, in the tobacco industry for a regular job. He's a interesting dude, to say the least, but
Nico von Cosmos.
Yeah, and he makes this crazy wine and mead and beer, and it's all very, very good. And it got me thinking, like, maybe the sense of place, like where we're growing our grapes or where we're, you know, whatever we're doing, maybe that actually has less to do with the final product, but maybe it's always just been that because you were in a certain area, there's been legacy and there's been more people that have been making that product in that one area for so long, that in itself is more indicative to the production of the product rather than the skill level of where or of the geology of the place. It's more about the skill level, is what I'm saying, and the tradition, right? So like, we're seeing people making like really great products, and this goes outside, of course, of distilling or cigar making, whatever. But just in general, being like a fantastic high-end producer, you might be able to do this anywhere now because of our connection with communication and education. You could do it anywhere. Like maybe people are just figuring out how to make great crafted things regardless of where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you said about know-how, I mean, like you say, when you look at Burgundy and you know that the monks have been doing that, growing great Pinot Noir since the 12th century, and there's all that knowledge not only in the land, but like to as group think tank it. Yeah. You know, if you go to your neighbor, oh, what are you doing over there? Well, I do this because of the sun exposure on this vineyard, blah, 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 whatever it might be. But there's no, yeah, and I think
well, like Paul Hobbs has gone down to South America. He's known as a great winemaker, and he goes from California to South America, and inevitably, like, just kind of lifted their the people that he worked with have done really well for, you know, they've done really well by having him help, yeah, like consult on their projects and do things great. So like, could we take those monks from like these 12th century monks and just transplant them to North Carolina and have them make wine here, and would it be damn good because they did it?
Yeah, well, the problem with the monks is they wrote everything down because I don't think they speak, so.
Oh yeah,
that's all right. They speak
not good,
but,
for a podcast,
but no, definitely, yeah. I don't know, think it's the only thing, but know-how and years of knowledge on working a certain land or a certain product is invaluable and certainly part of the equation. Yeah. And it makes me think, I thought what you were actually going to say, though, when you were talking about Havana, is that rum was going to be one of your like sneaky pairings. Because what's that Havana rum that...
We're going to have a few of those sippers that will... I mean, some people just won't think about it until you dive into it. But yeah, if you... I mean... I ran a dessert bar, so sweet tooth is in my blood for sure. Mm. But it's, yeah, you give me a, you know, more balanced, not overly sweet rum, like a Diplomatico, as a Cava. Those certainly allow for a pairing where you can dive into more of cinnamon and vanilla, things that start to, in more aged whiskeys you can find. But people don't think about it when you also look at aged rum. I mean, aged tequila, I don't know about Raleigh-Durham, but the Charlotte market in the last 12, 18 months, it's exploded. Hmm. And so, you know, people are going to come and be very surprised that for a whiskey bar, one of the first barrel programs we're going to run is actually going to be a, you know, extra Añejo aged Manhattan from the barrel. just because we see those flavor notes really pop up in those aged tequilas, and we want to be able to try to utilize that as an option for everyone as well.
Yeah, and I think it's just when you said the thing that the Balvenie aged in the sherry cask and the sweetness of that finish works, it just made me think of rum. And then also you started talking about local stuff. So like you have some really good rum made in this state, like Kildellville Hills.
Mm-hmm. Muddy River.
Muddy River.
Well, we were going to give love to our friends Lassiter's, but unfortunately, yeah, we love them. But
they were making great rum.
No longer exist. That's sad.
That did lead me to my last, back to the pairing discussion, because the old empirical England, which we're so obsessed with, and we still watch films and shows and stream shows today, but they were famous for, it was cigars and brandy. That's how you finish the evening. So do you have a go-to brandy that you guys are pairing some of your cigars with? And are you loving those, or what's really working with that?
You know, it's interesting.
Or were those damn British wrong the whole time?
I think that there's something to be said for brandy, but I don't know. Once you get to that option, I almost prefer a regular aperitif. Like to me, I immediately just defer to my, you know, the bartender staple of Fernet, and go a completely yeah. different direction.
Wow, that would be wild with a cigar.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. But from a brandy standpoint, we love being able to utilize it from a cocktail standpoint. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just haven't had the right one, but standalone, they don't seem to really pair as well as when you incorporate it into a more classic cocktail.
I'll give a shout out to Copper and Kings Brandy. They're not local, but they're out there in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, it's delicious.
And Copper and Kings is legit. Our buddy Alex Flanagan Our buddy Alex Flynn used to represent him for a long time.
Because he goes by Flanagan on his...
Flanagan. Damn you, Alex.
Well, I will, I'll give a shout out as well to not something local, but something that I used to, that I visited and worked very closely with, is if anybody's ever had Chateau Labade, it's an Armagnac from a small family-owned distillery. And
that's the one you got me.
That's the one I got you.
For my 40th birthday.
Yeah. And,
thank you.
And Armagnac is the little brother to cognac, so they're more of like craft and really small. I recommend trying it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I have the 1977 and you have the 1978.
That's right.
Yeah, that's how old we are, folks.
Yep.
How dare I?
Do the math.
No, this has been great. Ben, thank you so much for giving us your time, talking a little booze with our smoke. And, you know, and then maybe if this state catches on with like the rest of the country, then maybe there'll be other things to smoke legally in a place. And then that would be,
I believe that's called a blunt.
Yeah. I was going to say, would you be able to roll blunts in that scenario in a place like yours? And can you imagine how busy you would be?
I'm sure the Alcohol Beverage Commission will have something to say about it, but I like the idea of exploring it, that for sure.
Imagine the pairing possibilities with that.
It all be awesome, bro. It's all good.
Step at a time here.
Yeah. Well, before you do get out of here, we want to give a shout out to our friends who have not put cigarettes or tobacco in their ice cream yet, but they're just rocking it with liquor, which we don't mind. It's fantastic. I'm talking about Proof Alcohol Ice Cream, which is a 7% highly crafted pint of ice cream infused with various liquors like coconut rum, which sounds like that would be delicious with a cigar, or bourbon caramel. That sounds awesome too. Or, you know, you still have some holiday flavors like peppermint, and you had the pumpkin spice back in the fall. So yeah, maybe you could just...
great palate cleansers after you have a nice cigar.
Yeah. Think differently about dessert. Oh, yeah. Think differently about the after dinner dessert, and enjoy some Proof Alcohol Ice Cream where you find all of your alcohol ice creams, where you would find them. So that would be like in the beer and wine sections of a grocery store, like a Triangle Wine Company or Lowe's and Harris Teeter. And so go to proofalcoholicecream.com or click the link in our show notes for all of our fantastic sponsors. And Matt, what else you got, man?
Well, Ben, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your intimate knowledge of spirits and cigars. And you have made me... I will need to come out to the Vintage in Charlotte as soon as you guys open. And so go to the Vintage and you will drink and smoke very merrily.
Appreciate you all having me.
Thanks for listening to the NC F&B Podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.